Welcome to Stick Together, Australia's only national radio show all about workers' rights and social justice. Stick Together is produced at 3CR Radio in Melbourne and broadcast to you around the country on the Community Radio Network. I'm Jack Barry. Today we'll be visiting the Royal Commission. No, not the Royal Commission into the illegal Iraq War or big business and government corruption. Those Royal Commissions don't exist. No, we'll be talking about the Royal Commission into Union Corruption, a sort of a fictitious type Royal Commission. Now, it's got a lot of airtime, this Royal Commission, in all the mainstream media and a lot of space on the Herald Sun, a lot of sensationalised publicity that we've seen over the last 2 weeks. So we're going to be talking with Kevin Bracken, the State Secretary of the Maritime Union of Victoria, about this Royal Commission. But first, we're going to get a glimpse into life in the class struggle of London. Okay, now we're talking with our very own Dennis Rogatuk, our 3CR presenter, who's now our foreign correspondent in London. Now, tell us, Dennis, what are you doing in London?
Well, thanks, Jack. It's nice to be back on 3CR. In London, I'm doing a work placement with Unite the Union, which is UK's largest trade union. Uh-huh. And in particular, I will be working on the Unite the Union community membership scheme.
What sort of things does the community membership scheme do in London? What does that mean?
Well, first of all, it covers those workers that are not traditionally covered by United Union membership. United Union covers over 15 different industries across the UK. But more importantly, it actually helps to organize and mobilize various community campaigns in the areas where the community members live. So, for instance, I've been working a lot with the Unite Community Centre here in Tower Hamlets in East End, and mm-hmm. over here there has been several campaigns in support of the National Health Service NHS, which is currently facing cuts.
Yeah, it's like the equivalent of Medicare here. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. So United Community actually helps to bring people together and mobilize it for actions such as these. So mm-hmm. there was actually a 2,000 strong march and rally that United Community helped to organize here last weekend. But apart from that, it also offers services to United Community. It also offers services such as legal advice, job search, as well as the ability to use the services of the of its community centre.
Does organising unemployed people, is that part of the scope of the works of the community membership for Unite?
Yes, yeah, definitely. So,
because unemployment's been a growing problem in the UK, just as it is in much of Europe at the moment.
And definitely, United Union has recognised that with this Unite community membership. So, yep. There's in particular in Tower Hamlets, where there's a high level of youth unemployment. It's actually mm-hmm. Some of the services that it has been providing to the community is training and education. Both. Yep. So it regularly holds English as second language classes, as well as sort of other training programs to help the youth get back to work.
Okay, great. Now, there was a big mobilisation and a strike on the 10th of July that was carried out by public sector workers in England. Now, can you tell us a bit about what happened? What were the demands? Why did they go on strike?
Yes, well, over 2 million workers marched out on strike throughout the UK on July 10th. So there was over 50 cities across England, Wales and Scotland. A major mobilization also took place in London. So I was part of several hundred thousand workers marching out in part of several hundred thousand workers marching in London. One of the key issues of the strike is the fact that the government has offered all of its public sector workers a 1% rise, a 1% wage rise.
Right, which is like a wage cut, really, in effect.
Essentially, it is. Well, essentially, it is. Especially when you compare it to the fact that there's been an effective wage freeze for the past 3 years throughout the public sector. What you're actually looking at is the real wages of public sector and local government workers being having fallen by about 20% in the past 5 years.
Is that because prices have gone up and wages haven't? Prices of the,
Definitely.
The food, rent, everything's gone up, but the wages have stayed the same.
Exactly. So the living the costs of living have gone up have increased massively in the UK in the last few years. This is particularly in regards to housing costs, especially here in London. So while the public sector workers are facing higher living costs as everyone else, they've seen their real wages deteriorate massively in the last few years.
So what's the
So
fight
that was
back going to be like? So what are there going to be more mobilizations? What are the demands of the striking workers?
the key demand, which has been put forward by the unions representing the public sector workers. So that's Unite the Union, the Public and Commercial Services Union, the National Union of Teachers, and other public sector unions, is instead of raising wage by 1%, to raise them by £1.
1 pound.
And this will
What do you mean?
By £1.
1 pound an hour or £1?
£1 an hour.
Oh, yep.
To raise them by £1 an hour. And this will effectively bring the wage level of public sector workers to a level of the living of what they call the living wage,
Right, yep.
which I think is about £7.65 throughout UK and approximately £8.80 in London,
Yep.
which will allow well essentially allows public sector workers to
To live.
to well to not not yeah to live and to
To buy food.
actually be buy food,
Yeah.
pay for their accommodation, make sure they're not homeless,
Yeah.
like so many of the we've seen a sort of a rise in homelessness as a result of the higher house prices here.
Tune in to Stick Together, all about workers' rights and social justice.
8:30 a.m. Wednesday, 6:30 a.m. Thursday, 7 a.m. Saturday.
Or listen on demand on 3CR's website, 3cr.org.au.
Now that was Dennis Rogatchuk, our very own Dennis, talking to us from London, and I'm sure we're going to be hearing a lot more from Dennis over the coming weeks. Now we go on to the union witch hunt, the Royal Commission into unions just doing their job. We're talking with Kevin Bracken, the current State Secretary of the Maritime Workers Union.
G'day, Jack.
How's it going? Now, there's been this Royal Commission where the CFMEU has been accused of intimidating and extorting certain owners of construction companies. Now, in your experience, what does the union do? Like, on a daily basis, what do they do? Are they in the business of extorting and intimidating people?
Well, I've worked in construction, and the construction industry's been reasonably a tough industry, you know. It was hard work, and they had ruthless companies that used to be in there, or they have got ruthless companies that are still in there. But I mean, my father worked on building sites, and I know in the 70s, like three different builders went bankrupt in the 1 year where people didn't get paid money.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those builders were like the biggest builders in Melbourne. You know, had wonderful big houses down Brighton, like Beckton, Mainline. And so it's been an industry, it has been a bit of a rough and tumble industry. But one thing is the unions have done is they've made good progress. They've made good conditions of work for the people working in that industry, where they can have holidays with their children, where they do get sick days, where they do get redundancy money, because when you're working in the building industry, you're only working there until the building's finished, and then you're out of a job.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had, in Melbourne especially, there's been great progress made for construction workers. And you could probably contrast that to what happens to construction workers in Japan or Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you want to see the retired construction workers, you go down to subways because that's where they sleep at night.
Because they haven't been paid enough throughout their working life to be able to retire with any kind of dignity.
That's right. Most of them, it's just day labour, as we used to be in the 60s, just day labourers, paid, and it could be sacked at the whim, at someone's whim. And to where they've got now, they've got, you know, decent conditions of work. You know, they get holidays, they get sick days, they get redundancy money for when the construction, when the job finishes, to tide them over until they get there, until they start another job. And as well as that, the construction industry has become very professional, and Melbourne's one of the, you know, has got the best efficiency, as one of the most efficient, you know, cities in the world to, for construction to take place. I know when they did the Coal Royal Commission, they did a test on, they tried out, you know, Sydney and they tried out Melbourne, and Melbourne, the union sites were fully unionised, and Sydney, they weren't as fully unionised. And Melbourne was much more efficient than what Sydney was.
Yeah.
And so they couldn't go out and say, oh, the unions make it inefficient. And so they come out and said, oh, there's corruption in the building industry. And I think they spent $100 million. And at the end of that Royal Commission, there was not one person from the construction industry charged with any charges at all. Yeah, but they set up the Australian Building Control Commission, no? And
which is on the agenda again, isn't it? It's before Parliament again to come back.
That's right. They reformed, you know, they've reformed the ABCC to include a few more unions, including the Maritime Union as well now. But have a look what it did last time. There was no one charged with any charges. So this is just totally about, you know, what the bigger agenda is, which is taking people under control, you know, and where people have got a bit of say in their workplace, they're taking that power away from them.
So taking away the workers' dignity, their ability to say that they don't want to do dangerous work or that they should be paid decently because you never know when the next project's going to be.
That's right. And, you know, the other good benefit, I suppose, is they've started their own, they've got their own superannuation fund. Now, have a look at how many jobs around the city of Cbus. So this is the workers' money, which they've saved up as their superannuation, reinvesting in the industry where they're providing work for themselves and making profit for the companies.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you had a look at it, we'd say, well, why can't we do that in other industries, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's been, it's real benefits. It's benefit for the workers. You know, look at construction in Melbourne, you know, it's been fantastic development, you know, going on. Building companies have been making profits. You know, so they can't say that, you know, well, unions are charging exorbitant fees or you know, exorbitant rates, but it's a going rate. And when people are paid money, that money's not stuck under their bed; it's spent. You know, so it's good for the economy. And I've just seen Joseph Stiglitz at his on question and answer last Monday week. He said exactly the same thing. He said instead of austerity measures, that's bad for business because when you pull money out of it, you know, businesses start going broke. You know, we should be investing in our people. We should be investing in training. And that's good for the economy.
Now, when we talk about the historic gains of building workers through the union movement, now, how does workplace safety compare now on building sites now to, say, 30 years ago?
Well, my dad used to work on a construction site too.
Yep.
One day there was people pulling out formwork there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was old Grollo, originally the grandfather of Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
And he's letting me, Dad goes, hey, someone's going to get killed if you pull the props out. Those streets are still up. And he goes, don't worry, Joe, there's another boatload out next week. So it was a bit of a joke. But it's a dangerous industry. People used to get killed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not all of the gains they've made now, you know, with working at Heights, you know, was coming out from the construction industry, you know. And those gains have been made through tragedy, through people being killed on the job. But we've had, you know, action being taken out to stop that from happening. So, yeah, it's a much safer workplace now than what it was, you know, 30, 40 years ago. I know in plumbers, you know, once a week they were getting buried alive. Once every fortnight there was some plumber being buried alive. You know, they brought in, you know, shoring courses and qualifications. You know, there's a lot more training going in now. And the CFMEU's done a great job of training, you know, in their training centre now, like the state-of-the-art.
Mm.
You know, it issues licences in, you know, high-risk licences like crane driving, forklift and, you know, rigging and scaffolding, bogging.
They're great gains. It can also be as simple as the workers having the confidence to say that they don't want to do a certain thing because they see it as dangerous, and having an organised union on site so that they can back them up when they say, well, no, I don't want to be working at Heights with these conditions, or, you know, I don't want to be working in a trench that's this deep without shoring. So that's one of the other reasons why historically workplace deaths have gone down in dangerous industries.
That's right. And where you've got organised people there, you know, there is action taken and it's follow-up. And that's real progress.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you have a look where unions have been done away with, and look, I've spoken to people who have been working in building sites in New Zealand now, and since unions have been weakened and diminished in building sites over there, conditions of work are going down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's not even public toilets, there's not even, like, decent toilets here now, you know, they've a can in the corner, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, here we have, you know, people can work with a bit of dignity, but they're getting the job done well too.
Yeah.
So you'll find that, you know, a safe workplace is an efficient workplace.
Yeah. Now, of the Royal Commission, there's been so many accusations that are trying to point the finger at the unions and accuse the unions of criminal behaviour. Over the last year, there's been 18 deaths on construction sites, absolute tragedies for young workers that have died needlessly, tragedies for the families of those people. But how many of those deaths were the results of unions pushing workers, of unions running the workplace and pushing workers till they, you know, till they're at the point where they're doing dangerous work and they die?
How many have been pushed by unions? I'd say none of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's why if you had a Royal, you know, the Royal Commission, if they were looking into, you know, the building industry to make improvements here, instead of just looking at what penalties they'll place on unions and on union officials, they'd look at, you know, what they could do to make the job safer, you know, mm-hmm. to stop those deaths from happening. But they haven't got one iota of interest in making that a focus of theirs. It's merely done to break down the power of unions, you know. And the construction union has been a very strong and progressive force, you know, within the trade union movement. And, you know, we've got to be very grateful for them too. I know in the Patrick's dispute, you know, it was a strong construction union around to come and support us, you know, help us, you know, make sure that we're still here today.
Mm.
And I'd like to say that we've well forgotten that. We want to make sure we give every support to the, not only to the CFMU, to all the construction unions, the ETU, the plumbers, the metals as well. But we'll be there to make sure that they're still going to be here for another 5 and 10 and 20 years' time too.
Now, just on that point, this is a question we ask all the Stick Together interviewees on our show, and that's we're facing this round. This is just the latest round of many rounds of government persecution of the union movement. How are we going to win? How are we going to get out of this stronger with a stronger union movement?
Well, we have to work together. That's the only thing that was ever been good for working people, is when we stick fat, support each other, and when people have come under attack, they get supported by other people as well. So it's one of the things that held us in, you know, when they attacked us through the Patrick's dispute, was strong support between the trade union movement, was to make sure, oh, we will be there when the CFMEU needs us to do something, or the construction union need us to do it, we'll be there to help it. But we have to talk to each other too, you know, instead of this rubbish that's in the Herald Sun every day. I mean, I remember when the Rollo wall fell down. You could see, it was quite clear Johnny Shecker was here, you know, pulled the rubble off him. Now, if that had been a Liberal politician, I would have said, look, he's a hero, have a look at him. There wasn't one mention of it. You know, it's just a conversation. The only thing that's been written about John is a conversation he's had with someone over the phone. And, you know, mightn't sound the best, but it's a rough and tumble industry and people talk to each other. But what come out of it? You know, well, I suppose probably they do need to probably get people on jobs every now and again. So...
Just as a union...
Sometimes you need some strength, you know, to make sure that things happen.
Yeah. And, I mean, just like a union's going to stand up for workers that are about to be sacked and telling employers that they want that person on the job, there's no reason why a union can't organise to get people that they know have a culture of health and safety on the workplaces.
That's right. And it's... When you find that, you know, when people have had it, when there's been an accident on site, forget about the cost there, because the cost of an accident is many, many more times, you know, what it is, what we've been in. You know, you're actually saving these companies money.
That was the Victorian State Secretary of the Maritime Union of Victoria, Kevin Bracken. Now we're going to get an update on a good news story. A story about unions, enviro groups, and even some small businesses coming together to make a worker-run cooperative that does what government's not doing, and that's the solutions for climate change. All right, we're talking with Dave Karen, the project manager for the Earthworker Cooperative, and we've just Earthworkers just had a great crowdfunding campaign. And out of that crowdfunding campaign, what have you got out of it?
Well, we've grown in support is the first thing. That's been wonderful. A whole heap of people around Australia have joined Earthworker, become Earthworkers. One of the highlights for me, I suppose, is the social justice spend. So a lot of people donated to the crowdfunding campaign over the fortnight. It was a precise fortnight, $78,500, which was excellent. A lot of people donated specifically to ensure that solar hot water goes into low-income and specifically elderly low-income housing. So we've done a partnership with the Father Bob Maguire Foundation to that end. And we've got five solar systems, heat pumps, that are going to go into low-income housing. So two in Geelong and three in South Melbourne. So it's a very, very exciting prospect, and it's just a beginning for us. We'll maintain that sort of fundraising so that we can, you know, do that social justice spend as the workers' cooperatives develop in Australia. So very exciting. That you know, as we launch into the process of rebadging Everlast in Dandenong over into become the first working cooperative, Eureka's Future Workers Cooperative.
And how close are you to actually making that happen?
Well, because of the crowdfunding, we can now begin the process. So we're going to start to rebadge. We're going to go on collecting and raising money so that we can pay off the current owners and rebadge completely. And then, of course, the next exciting step is the move into Morwell. So we're looking by the end of this year to be down there, fit out and finish the factory, new worker owners coming into work out of that region, and others, of course, from Dandenong will be working up here in a distribution point, the current factory, as well as looking at recycling those systems that we take out of existing households.
Right, so it's pretty exciting. So we're talking about the social justice angle of this, and that money was raised for heat pumps. So the people who are having, can you tell us a bit about the people who are going to have heat pumps installed in their houses? How much do they have to pay for the heat pump, and what will it do to their energy bills?
Well, the because of the social justice spend, the elderly Australians who will receive them will pay nothing. What will happen to their bills is the bills will go down towards zero. So it's fantastic for people in public or community housing. One of the best things that any sort of social justice spend can do, indeed this is what taxation should be doing, our revenue should be paying for this, government should be doing this, it shouldn't be something we would, you know, have ongoing fundraising for. But one of the best spends that a government, or in our case, can do is to eliminate debt out of low-income families' lives. And so with solar hot water, that's one way of doing that. We want to also look further down the track at the solar ventilator. We've got the rights to begin to manufacture a solar ventilator. It's a little beauty here in Australia, and that can take the summer temperatures in your roof down to 28 degrees in a matter of minutes. So again, for elderly Australians who often can't afford air conditioning, that will be a real boon.
So for people who are interested in workplace democracy and for making the practical solutions to tackle climate change, how can people get involved?
They can join Earthworker. That's the first step. Become an Earthworker and become an active Earthworker. You can do that, the first bit. You can join by going to earthworkercooperative.com.au. We have regular general meetings. There's a newsletter. There are so many ways that people can participate. They can set up their own, if they're in the regions, their own local Earthworker group, and we can assist in resourcing that group to carry out whatever it wants to do in its own local community. There's a new group just kicking off in Newcastle. We're just today, in fact, sent off a whole bunch of resources so that that group can establish, it can get its cooperative board up and running. They're in a good position because they're not going to have to repeat the performance of the last 16 years here in Victoria. They can stand on our shoulders and reach up a bit higher.
Great, fantastic. Well, it's great to hear from you, and no doubt we'll be hearing about even greater successes in the near future from Earthworker.
Thanks very much.
And that does it for this edition of Stick Together. I'm Jack Barry, and I'd like to thank my guests on this week's program, our very own Denis Rogachuk from London, the current State Secretary of the Maritime Union of Victoria, Kevin Bracken, and the Project Coordinator of the Earthworker Project, Dave Karen. And I would also like to thank the Community Broadcasting Foundation for its financial support of the program. And of course, thank you for listening. Hope you can tune in again at the same time next week.
You're listening to Stick Together, workers' stories and union news. Broadcast around the country every week on the Community Radio Network.